There was a man who came to see me some time ago. He wanted to talk about some severe problems that were going on in his life and how he was struggling with those and was knocked back and forth by these terrible things. And had to admit, as I listened to him, that the problems in his life were really bad. That anybody faced with those problems would have been hard-pressed from all sides. And yet, as I spoke with my friend, it began to occur to me that even though he considered himself to be a Christian, he had never understood what it really meant to believe in Jesus, the same kind of way that Jesus talked about as eating him or swallowing him. Remember when we were studying through the sermon about the bread of life, and Jesus said, unless you eat my flesh, you have no life in you. And this metaphor of swallowing is great because it's a personal act. It's not something you can do as a group. It's an act of trust, because you don't swallow unless you trust what you're about to swallow is going to be good for you. It's a voluntary act, and it's an act in which you take something that exists outside of you, inside of you, by an act of personal trust and surrender to become your life inside you. That is a perfect metaphor. And my friend had not understood about this, and so I began to explain what it meant. Do this and come to life in a new way. Have the Holy Spirit alive in your heart. And he was attracted to the idea and started to talk as though that would solve his problem. And I said, well, no, actually, I cannot promise you that your problems will go away. In fact, they might get worse. But there's a whole different deal when you're going through the problems with the Holy Spirit alive in your heart, guiding you and empowering you and giving you the strength to stand up in the midst of these problems. A whole different deal when you're doing that as opposed to just simply stumbling around in the dark on your own, being battered by the problems. And as we talked about what it took to make that act of surrender happen, I looked at him and he had this expression on his face that you've probably seen, maybe you can relate to it personally, an expression of panic. And he sat quietly for a moment as, you know, I'd asked him, do you trust Jesus enough to swallow him? And he said, after a few moments of silence with his panic look on his face, he said, I'm not going to know if this is true till I do it, am I? And I said, no, you're not. I can tell you what happened to me, but fact is, this is not something that you do by proof. It's something you do by faith. It's designed that way. And so, yeah, you're right. It's a leap of faith. And he thanked me for my time and went off to think it over. I haven't heard back from him. Not yet. I don't know if I will. But maybe you can relate to that moment of crisis when it feels like you're risking everything. And you are. Because the difference, as Jesus says, is having no life in you or having eternal life in you. It's a life and death decision. It's a without question the most important deciding moment in your life, the most important decision in your life, and it has to be made by faith, not by proof. But it does not have to be a matter of blind faith, and that's an important thing to know. That there are things that we can consider when you're asking the question, is Jesus credible? Is what he has said to us believable? Is it credible? If it is, then it's, you know, it's the most amazing great news that has ever been on the planet. If it's not, it's the most deceptive and wicked false hope that's ever been inflicted on humanity. And the question boils down to this: is Jesus credible? And there are some things that you can go on as you're making that decision. There's a place in the Bible where Jesus' credibility is directly attacked, and he responds in a way that reveals to us some principles to apply to trying to figure out, is a message credible? So you can decide whether or not to take it by faith. And let's turn to it. It's in the 7th chapter of John, starting in verse 14. And what's going on here is that there's a big feast going on in Jerusalem. It's a week-long, 8-day celebration of harvest and remembering God's faithfulness to provide for the nation of Israel in the desert. And Jesus' brothers had really strongly urged him to go up and teach at this thing and show a few miracles and so forth to try and gather a crowd of disciples around him. And he decided that he would not take his brother's advice, but it would do what God told him to do. And so he snuck up there secretly. And then in the middle of the feast, it says in verse 14, Jesus went up to the temple and began to teach. The courts, the Jews were amazed and asked, "How did this man get such learning without having studied?" And Jesus answered, "My teaching is not my own. It comes from him who sent me. If anyone chooses to do God's will, he will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. He who speaks on his own does so to gain honor for himself. But he who works for the honor of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There's nothing false about him. Has not Moses given you the law? Yet not one of you keeps the law. Why are you trying to kill me?" "You're demon-possessed," the crowd answered. "Who trying to kill you?" And Jesus said to them, "I did one miracle, and you're all astonished. Yet because Moses gave you circumcision, though actually it did not come from Moses, but from the patriarchs, you circumcised a child on the Sabbath. Now if a child can be circumcised on the Sabbath so that the law of Moses may not be broken, why are you angry with me for healing the whole man on the Sabbath? Stop judging by mere appearances and make a right judgment." At that point, some of the people in Jerusalem began to ask, "Isn't this the man they're trying to kill? Here he is speaking publicly, and they're not saying a word to him. Have the authorities really concluded that he is the Christ? But we know where this man is from. When the Christ comes, no one will know where he is from." Then Jesus, still teaching in the temple courts, cried out, "Yes, you know me, and you know where I am from, but I'm not here on my own, but he who sent me is true." In other words, God really sent me. Truly. "You do not know him, but I know him, because I am from him, and he sent me." With this, they tried to seize him, but no one laid a hand on him, because his time had not yet come. And still many in the crowd put their faith in him. And they said, "When the Christ comes, will he do more miraculous signs than this man?" The Pharisees heard the crowd whispering such things about him, and then the chief priests and the Pharisees sent temple guards to arrest him. And Jesus said, "I am with you for only a short time, and then I go to the one who sent me. You will look for me, but you will not find me, and where I am, you cannot come." And the Jews said to one another, "Where does this man intend to go that we cannot find him? Will he go where our people live scattered among the Greeks and teach the Greeks? What did he mean when he said, 'You'll look for me, but you will not find me, and where I am, you cannot come'?" Now, contained in this passage are three really, really important principles for assessing Jesus' credibility. And I believe assessing the credibility of any messenger. But it also gives some evidence of some things that we don't want to use to check out whether or not Jesus is credible. And one of those things, it seems to me, is evident, is the crowd. You really cannot use the crowd as a bellwether to figure out what to do. Because a crowd is fickle. A crowd is going back and forth, whispering this way, that way, hiding what they really think, saying some confrontive things at other times. One of the principles we can pull out of that is the crowd is not trustworthy. And I believe no crowd is trustworthy. There's a common saying, can all that many people be wrong? I believe it really should say, can all that many people really be right? Because almost invariably, when you see people jumping on a bandwagon, it'd be better off for you to jump off that bandwagon, get off and think about it independently, because bandwagons or mob actions are notoriously wrong and fickle. People cheering for Jesus were not really cheering for who he was, not most of them. They were cheering for who they wanted him to be. And when he disappointed them, many of those same people presumably were also cheering towards the end of the week for him to be crucified. You know, the crowd is notoriously unreliable as a source to figure out what's right. One of the scenes that we've seen repeated on the TV set here recently that has discouraged my heart more than about anything else of recent days is the picture of Michael Jackson walking into court in his pajamas, surrounded by cops and lawyers and adoring fans. It's just mind-boggling to me, the whole scenario. I mean, here you got a guy who has milked everything possible from what American culture calls success, because he's good at singing and dancing. He's famous. He's popular. He's wealthy. He can have anything he wants. And what he wants is more than what he has. And he's butchered his face to try and find more beauty. He's built himself a fantasy land. He's apparently so empty inside, so hungry inside, that he's trying out all different kinds of deviant addictions and things to try and fill that empty place inside. But everywhere he goes, even in his pajamas, he got these big throngs of people with signs, "We love you, Michael." What's that all about? My friends are not cheering for who he really is. They're not cheering for the lost man behind the plastic surgery mask, the empty man, the desperate man. They're cheering for the guy that they want him to be. And they're dead wrong. Dead wrong. And this crowd, in this particular narrative, is going back and forth. And they're saying things that don't really line up with the truth in any case. One of the things that we must observe in this, that we cannot trust as we're making the decision of whether Jesus is credible, is the crowd. Second observation is we cannot trust the authorities either. The religious authorities cannot be trusted when you're making up your mind if Jesus is credible. The religious authorities back then can't be trusted. The religious authorities today cannot be trusted. Why not? Well, because religious authorities have a self-interest in making you believe what they want you to believe. It's a conflict of interest. And they're shot through with this ulterior motive. So you better be very careful whether you are listening to so-called Christian TV, or you're listening to me, or you're listening to anybody else. You better be very careful not to take what the religious authorities say at face value as you're making your decision. Now, you watch Christian TV, so to speak, or so, you know, this circus that passes for Christian TV. And you see these guys that say a little bit about Jesus and a whole bunch about how you can send in your money. And it should be fairly self-evident that you cannot trust the authorities or those who hold themselves up as authority. The authorities in this particular case are operating with, you know, with absurdity. First, they say in verse 15, they say, "How do you have the right to teach since you haven't studied?" What they're saying is, this guy's teaching is bogus because he has not sat at our feet and studied. You see, because where Jesus would have studied would have been under their authority, under their teaching. And to get a credential from them would have meant that he had been ready to parrot back to them exactly what they told him to say. You've been in classes like that where the teacher didn't want you to think independently, but to say exactly what that they said. And if you wanted a good grade in the course, you had to say it the way they said it. Same thing with these guys. And so if you do the math on this, they're saying, unless you tell us what we already believe, you have nothing to teach us. It's absurd. It's absurd. They're saying that you have no credibility unless you have a credential. Well, it seems to me that we've had plenty of ample evidence in our day, in our town, or this, you know, in this county, of people who have credentials and are not necessarily credible. I mean, you could have a whole bunch of letters after your name, and that doesn't make the words that come out of your mouth true. You can even be a tenured professor in an institute of higher learning and not know what truth is. Credentials do not equal credibility, like these authorities think it should. The authorities go on to criticize him for healing a guy on the Sabbath, and they're dealing, Jesus says to them, don't deal with superficialities, mere appearances, but make a right decision. Go deep. And their superficiality is causing them to respond with lightweight legalism. So they can lead people around by the nose by these rules and regulations that they made up themselves. Be careful about trusting the crowd. Be careful about trusting the authorities. But pay real close attention to these three things that Jesus says you can use as a way to evaluate his credibility. What are they? Let's look and see what they are. Jesus says in verse 16, "My teaching is not my own. It comes from him who sent me. If anyone chooses to do God's will, he'll find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own." The first mark of credibility is that he has given a verifiable source of authority. He says, it's not my teaching, it comes from God the Father, and here's how you can check it out. When you're trying to assess the credibility of anybody's message, it doesn't make any difference who it is, look for a verifiable authority. Somebody comes to your door and says, I'm with the police department and I'm supposed to search your living room. Get their badge number. Call the station and see if that's really who it is, right? A couple of weeks ago, I got this email from PayPal, the service I use to pay for things on eBay. And it said, we are worried about identity theft. And we need for you to renew your information with PayPal. Please do not respond to this email because of the fact that it could be fraudulent. But rather go to our site, and here's a handy link. You can click on the link, go to our site, and fill in the information on the site directly. So I click on the link, and sure enough, there's a PayPal site. And then I thought, wait a minute. How do I know this is a PayPal site? So, I actually had the first two letters of my password typed in, and I deleted them and went back. And I sent the email, I forwarded it to PayPal. Did you guys send this? And they immediately responded, no way. We didn't send this at all. It's a fraud. These guys warning me about identity theft were in the business of identity theft. If you want to check somebody's credibility, make sure you can verify their authority. Well, that's what Jesus said. He said, I didn't come from on my own. I came from God. And here's how you can check it out. Now, this is the part that I love about this. These religious authorities, in the midst of this crowd, they've shouldered their way up to the front and they've gotten their stern faces on and they've got their fingers wagging like this. And by what authority are you doing that? And Jesus does this brilliant chess move with them. He says, if anybody wants to check out my credentials, wants to see if I really have been sent from God, here's the way you can do it. If you choose to do God's will, you'll know. Now, here's the brilliant part about this, is Jesus is implying in full, you know, I'm sure he said this out loud where the whole crowd could hear him. He's implying to these religious mucky-mucks that they have something wrong in their hearts, and they are not interested in following God's will, because if they were interested in following God's will, they wouldn't have to ask if he had the authority to teach. They would know. Now, first of all, if Jesus was a fake, he would never make a claim like that, because what he claimed was true. If you really and truly choose to do God's will, you will know about the truth. You'll find the truth. The truth will set you free. You know, Jesus said, anyone who listens and learns from God will come to me. It's absolutely beautiful the way he implies, he does more than imply, he accuses almost, these guys of really wanting to follow their own ideas, their own will, and not God's. Because he says, if anybody really determines to follow God's will, he'll know. You won't have to ask. Now, if you apply that principle in our day, and it's just as applicable today, if you're wondering, if you're still in a situation where you've heard all about Jesus, you're coming because you're attracted to the idea of Jesus, but you still haven't quite made up your mind, and you don't know how to get over that hump to make a leap of faith that's not blind faith, here's what you can do. For the next month, every single day, you pray and you ask, God, you show me what you want me to do today. And then when he shows you, you have the courage to do it. It's not sitting around waiting for God to move you, because it's choosing to do what God shows, okay? So it's if you put yourself in that situation where you pray every day, God, you show me what to do, and I'll do it. And you really do that, and you follow through with it. It may not even take a whole month, but I guarantee you, if you do that for a month, you'll be sitting on Jesus' doorstep by the end of the month. Guaranteed. Because he comes from God. And God's whole purpose is to lead you to him so he can lead you to God. It's a guarantee. And if you're struggling with making that decision, look in your heart and see if it isn't true that you're protecting yourself from what God wants you to do. You got your walls of resistance up there. If anyone chooses to do God's will, he will know that I really have been sent from God. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. So, first principle is verifiable authority equals credibility. Second principle, in verse 18, Jesus says, he who speaks on his own does so to gain honor for himself. But he who works for the honor of the one who sent him is a man of truth. There's nothing false about him. Second thing to look for when you're trying to assess credibility of Jesus or any other messenger is humility. Humility. There is a positive correlation between humility and the truth of the message. There's an inverse correlation between arrogance and the truth of the message. In other words, the more arrogant a messenger is, the more full of himself the messenger is, the less you should accept his message. You look on infomercials and you'll see that this is true. As one guy when he comes on, he wants to sell you this get-rich-quick scheme, and he's surrounded by the accoutrements of his wealth. You know, his mansion, his speedboats, his babes in bikinis, and he's wants to sell you something and puff himself up as somebody really special in your eyes so that you'll believe him and buy his stuff. There's another guy who sells pots and pans with a lifetime warranty on them, and he says, look, these are just the best. I mean, you try them, you'll see. The difference between those two approaches is one guy advertises with humility and the other guy, well, some humility, and the other guy with no humility. And you want to watch for humility, because the stronger the truth of your message is, the less you have to posture and puff yourself up. Look for humility. And Jesus says, If I'm trying to make a name for myself, you can discredit my message, because my message comes from God. And so everything I say is pointing you toward God. Now, you apply that principle to we've got voices all over the place in our day and age talking about God. Which ones of them are trying to make a name for themselves? And which ones couldn't care beans if you knew what their name was and point you to God? It's that second group that's credible. That's the principle. And if Jesus, the Son of God, operated with humility on this earth, who has the right to be arrogant about anything? Look for verifiable authority. Look for humility if you're trying to assess credibility of the message. And then finally, he says in verse 19, hey, wait a minute, guys. Didn't Moses give you the law? How come none of you keeps it? Why are you trying to kill me? I love this. Jesus has been doing these great checkmate moves. I mean, when it comes to verifiable authority, he does his checkmate. He says, look, you can check it out. If the condition of your heart is really in line with God's will, if you're able to pray, thy will be done, you'll know. Checkmate. Because these guys don't know. Well, then when it comes to humility, he says, you can accept my message because I'm not trying to make a name for myself. Well, the whole crowd knew that everybody that considered himself to be a religious authority was in this one-upsmanship competition with each other to make a name for themselves. They strutted about in the special robes. They had all of the best seat at the banquets, all this kind of stuff. Checkmate. Checkmate. Well, so then it comes to this. He says, how come you guys don't practice what you preach? How come you're not following the law that Moses gave you? The third principle to look for when you're assessing the credibility of Jesus' message is consistency with his life. See, the first test is an external test. Check out his credentials with verifiable authority. Second one is internal. Is he act with humility? Third one is is there a consistency between what he says and what he does? And this is my favorite chess move of all of Jesus. He says, you guys don't follow God's law. How come you're trying to kill me? And they respond, it says the crowd, but I'm certain it's the authorities in the crowd. We're not trying to kill you. What are you, demon-possessed? Well, the whole crowd knows they're trying to kill him. Because the next thing out of the crowd is, isn't this the guy they're trying to kill? Well, what are they doing? They're lying, which happens to be against Moses' law. It's one of the big ones, the 10. False witness. Okay, well, let's suppose they don't break that law and they tell the truth. Well, then they're guilty of murder. Either way, it's checkmate. Game, set, and match. You know, Jesus has got them so boxed in a corner by their own stupidity and arrogance and self-interest and so forth. It's just amazing. But when we're trying to assess the credibility of a message, we need to look for the consistency in the life of the messenger. You know, recently I went looking for exercise equipment to get rid of some of my winter flab. And, you know, you're bombarded with this stuff. You know, what do you want, the ab roller or the thigh master or the, you know, I mean, it's just amazing the number of things that you can get. And I was looking for a remote for my Nordic track, but I couldn't find one. So it could exercise while I was watching TV. But so I went looking and I did some research. And, you know, all of these things are advertised with testimonials from these stars, right? Well, I read this great article in Consumer Bulletin or something like that down at the library, where they interviewed the stars, the spokespeople for the exercise equipment, and they asked them, do you really use it? Almost none of them did. Almost none of them. After the first week, they got a free one from the manufacturer, tried it out for a couple of days, that was it. So I went back to my Nordic track. You look for consistency. You know, here are these guys telling you about God, and they're breaking his law. And when Jesus puts them in checkmate, what do they respond? They're going to arrest him. Now, how about Jesus' consistency? Does he really practice what he preaches? His consistency is such that when he rode that donkey into town, he knew that was the road to the cross. And without making any attempts to fight back, he went to the cross because he loved us. He had verifiable authority. He lived with humility, spoke with humility, and he lived with absolute consistency. So now it comes back to you personally. Can you trust him? Doesn't have to be blind faith, but it does have to be faith. Is he credible? Incredibly credible.